You are entering the Royals Podcast Network.
A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
Belted to left field. Billy comes through tonight. Splash!
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
And welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, presented to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. I am your host, Jeff Herr, and with me, as always, the incomparable Michael Engel. Michael, how are you doing this evening?
This has been a kind of weird baseball week, and it's kind of been a weird day today also.
Yes, so, and should we start with that?
We ought to discuss that because it's very interesting.
Yes, very relevant. I just got home a little while ago from an interview with NBC 41 News. So if you're listening to this, it will probably have already, if it airs, it will probably have already aired. But this today being May 7th, when we're recording, when we got up this morning, we have all the podcasts under the Rose Podcast Network have a email chain. So anything that's relevant for all the shows or whatever, then, you know, people can email and they have everybody that they can talk to and all our resources in play. Well, this morning, Aaron Reese emailed all of us and said, hey, none of the podcasts are on iTunes. What's going on here? And we didn't know. We didn't know if there was some sort of error in uploading or, you know, what the case may be. And Aaron started looking into it more. And our podcast was taken down. You know, everything on the Royals podcast feed was taken down. And then he started noticing other podcasts. There was a Minnesota Twins podcast that was taken down. I believe there's a San Francisco Giants one that was taken down. And then as the day kind of grew along, we got a little bit more information, and you're probably at least acutely aware of it by now when you'll listen to this, unless we, well, maybe not, but the MLB, Major League Baseball Advanced Media, apparently made a decision with iTunes to remove all of the podcasts that either had a Major League Baseball team or Major League Baseball in their title or in their description. I don't know if that's necessarily the directive that was given now. We have very little information about what actually occurred to cause this or to what was the reasoning behind it, I should say. But the end result being that there were a lot of podcasts, a lot of team-centered podcasts that were taken off of iTunes. Now, you're obviously listening to this, so they're not, you know, there was no legal action taken. There's nothing that was banned. There's no, you know, nothing that serious, but just a decision made by iTunes that was apparently directed from MLB Advanced Media that removed all these podcasts. Now, there's been some different reports on what exactly went on and who made the decision and all that. So, you know, we're still trying to find, as of this recording, we're still trying to find out all the exact answers for why we were taken down and, you know, who made the decision and what we can do to get back up on iTunes. So if you normally listen to iTunes and you're listening to this, you've obviously found a different route, and it's either SoundCloud.com or a SoundCloud app or Stitcher Radio and their app. So, I mean, they're definitely, and of course, RollsPodcast.com. But so there's definitely avenues that you've either already found, or if you haven't, then, you know, then you're somehow listening to this. Those are ways to listen to this. If you're, I don't know if you're listening with a friend and you don't know this, but because I know that's very popular.
I'm sure there are RoyalsPodcast.com listening parties.
I would imagine, yes. So, yeah. that's the dream, right?
Right. So, right. Fan anyway, sites.
Yeah, but anyway, so this thing kind of took off and caught on there, and you had national media writers that were talking about it. You had, you know, Hardball Talk wrote an article about it. I saw Craig Calcaterra was tweeting about it. I saw quite a few tweets from all the podcasts that we follow. That, you know, you kind of, when we, with podcasting and blogging, you kind of develop relationships with people from other towns and other teams and everything. And so you follow them on Twitter. So there, I mean, there were this got a lot of traction in a bad way. On a lot of the social media, and then NBC 41 News actually reached out to us, us being the podcast network, to try and get somebody to talk, and I was available to do it, and so I went in and did a little interview, and maybe if you're watching NBC 41 News before you listen to this, you will have seen it. But yeah, so we're actively trying to still get back up onto iTunes, but if you cannot, obviously we still have other options. So if you're listening to this and you have friends who are wondering where it went on iTunes, then let them know you can also get it on SoundCloud and Stitcher and royalspodcast.com. So it's been kind of a weird day, trying to figure out exactly what had happened and why and how we can get it fixed.
Yep.
But anyway, so we got
change anything else though. I mean, no, we're going to do the same show. So,
no,
I mean,
we're still posting on Royals Podcast every day. So yep. don't worry about that. Nothing will change in terms of content. We as podcasts have been given no notice in terms of what we provide content wise that anything is wrong or illegal. So we won't be changing any content. We won't be affected by this in those terms. The only thing that will be affected is the possibility of not being able to use iTunes to download the podcast in the future. So keep that in mind.
But you should have a droid anyway, so.
Yes. No, actually. No.
Yeah. Tough call there, Jeff.
I'm just so used to agreeing with Michael Engel that this is what happens. But anyway, now that we got that little business taken care of, we're going to move on to the week at hand here. We are recording this, as I said, on May 7th, which is a couple – normally we record on Mondays, Monday nights, and then we bring up the next day. So we had – because Mike and I both had stuff going on, we had to back it up a couple days. And just as happens every year, just in the span of those 2 days difference for recording – we got a big ride on that Royals roller coaster fandom that we just love to be a part of. Monday night, it was if anybody out there reads Bill Simmons and has read him from far back, you know what he's referred to as the gut punch loss, where you thought you had it in hand, and then boom, it's taken from you right away. You know, like the Chiefs losing to the Colts this past year in the playoffs on one of the worst comebacks in NFL history, depending on which side you're on, right. Worst or best. But that was a gut punch loss. And Monday night, May 5th, for the Royals against the Padres was a gut punch loss. The Royals had the lead three separate times they had a lead. And Yordan Ventura pitched a great game.
Made one mistake.
One mistake. Was it in the sixth inning, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sixth inning, he's cruising. He had 9 strikeouts at the time, and he ended up with 10 on the game. But one small misstep to it was Grandal, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yasmani Grandal. Just bam, he just crushed it.
And he destroyed the pitch, yeah.
Just killed it, and it was gone. Everyone knew it as soon as they hit, and tied the ball game up. But then Eric Hosmer comes in the next inning and hits a solo home run, his first of the year. Hey, welcome to the show. Hi. and then Greg Holland blows a save, and he gives up a home run to Jerko, right?
Yeah.
And then in the ninth inning, Greg Holland, of all people, then Mike Moustakas, wasn't it? I went to bed at this point, so I had to get the nest and rest up.
It went into extras, and Moustakas drove in the go-ahead run to make it 5-4. And the Royals had already, by that point, Ventura had thrown 6, and they came in, and I don't remember how they spaced it out. But, I mean, once Holland was gone, I mean, they used Herrera and they used Collins, and it just ended up they were pretty much at the end of it of the bullpen. And
I think did they use Davis too? I think they used Davis.
I think they did use Davis. Yeah, I don't have the box score in front of me, but I've tried to forget the whole game.
But I mean their main guys they used because they were trying to lock up the win.
Yeah.
So they used all their, and it was a tight game at that point. So
yeah, walk off win for the Padres. It was. Ugh. Really annoying. And it was, they'd lost 4 games before, and they had just gotten done getting just crushed and destroyed in every game against the Tigers. And just a really crappy weekend for baseball and, 5-game losing streak. And they came back and you know, last night on Tuesday, they actually showed some life late. They got into extras again, but they got 8 good innings from Guthrie, really saved the bullpen, because that was huge, because the bullpen had been overworked.
Yes.
Wade Davis was filthy, and Greg Holland was filthy too. The Royals, you know, Eric Hosmer doubles, gets really psyched up, ends up scoring from second on a CNI single by Gordon. And Gordon scored on a Billy Butler double of the wall, so the Royals end up, you know, win 3-1. And then today they destroyed San Diego 8-0. Was really never a contest.
And, yeah, they just killed them, which is what they should be doing to a team like the Padres, because they're better than the Padres.
Yeah.
When you look on paper, they're better.
Yeah.
So those are the types of things that should be happening. So we had that roller coaster that Monday night. Things were really bad, and you hear, you know, it started to, okay, these are the, you know, these problems that have permeated the organization. They're rearing their ugly head again. Are they going to be able to turn it around? And then now, you know, people are feeling a little bit better. The offense has woken up the last couple games. Now they're one game below 500, and they're coming up on some winnable games here. I think they go out to Seattle next, right?
Yeah, four games in Seattle.
So four games in Seattle. I mean, they can make some noise here if they can keep putting things together and keep it going on offense. One of the things, though, that was kind of made some waves this week was after the Monday night loss, then on Tuesday, a lot of stories come out with interviews with Dayton Moore. A lot of talk from Dayton Moore about what the Royals' current problems are, some views of his on how to fix them and what the issues are, dealing with on-base percentage, dealing with hitting with runners in scoring position. And I want you guys all to stay tuned, because Mike and I are going to delve. That's going to be our kind of in-depth topic this week. So after our first break, we're gonna come back and delve into that. So, but yeah, I mean, coming off that Padres series, the Royals are one game under 500 now. They ended the streak before it got too bad, the losing streak. So things are looking slightly on the uptick now. Eric Hosmer is really starting to come around. He had four RBIs today. Billy Butler, I mean, he didn't really play much in the Padres series, but I believe he even had an RBI off the bench. Coming in as a pinch hit, didn't he?
On Tuesday he did. Yeah.
Yeah, Tuesday night.
Destroyed the ball. And he's really, you know, and Dave Lesky has a good article on Pine Tar Press about this. But, you know, when Butler was moved down to the sixth spot and moved out of cleanup, you know, it was, I don't know if it was like a wake up call, because I don't think you really need to give Butler a wake up call. He's the most professional hitter on the team, but it was still one of those things they had to do it. And he knew that he was a little messed up mechanically at the plate. So they moved him down to sixth, and he got a hit that day, and he got a hit the next day, and the next day, and the next day. And if you look at it, you know, in his last 19 games since that day that he was moved to the sixth spot in the lineup, Butler, it's 19 games. He's got 21 hits, hitting .318, .370, .455 as his slash line. So it looks a lot better. I think all those extra base hits have been in that time frame, including his first home run of the year. He's hitting doubles gap to gap like you expect him to. He's got a lot more line drives. And his numbers really, like the batted ball numbers, really even out to kind of look more like his typical yearly numbers. And so that is very encouraging, especially if Hosmer's hitting like he is too. Hosmer's swing looks years better than it did a week ago. And, I mean, if you get those two guys in the middle of the order doing well, yeah, I mean, it gives them some potential. And then you just kind of keep hoping you get the same pitching and defense that you've kind of been getting all year. I mean, Alcides Escobar is going to win a Gold Glove this year if he keeps doing what he's doing. He's been – there was one day, you know, he had that one play where he went from the extreme shift and caught the foul ball.
Yep.
And that was like a three-day web jam winner. And then there was one game where he was up against himself. So it was that play against another Escobar play. And today, oh, man, he made a couple of good plays. He made a double play up the middle, just like a 6-3 double play, real tough play. And he did the Jeter throw, and as Jeff Passan described it, he did the Jeter throw better than Derek Jeter's ever done the Jeter throw. And it was just a great throw. So, I mean, he is.
Well, and there was I think it was Monday night. He made a play where it was a ball up the middle that was just close to being a hit. And maybe again, with a normal shortstop, it would have been. But he came up and and fielded it and just and did one of the things where he spins around to kind of use his to go with his body for the throw. And man, just threw a strike to Hosmer, and like Hosmer didn't have to move, and he made it look so easy. And
yeah, it looks routine when he does it anymore, and that's
yeah. I mean, it's amazing because the degree of difficulty of pulling off something like that with the level of excellence that he did is amazing. He just made it look so easy. So, and the best thing is, so far this season, I should knock on wood when I say this, but I haven't seen. Sometimes you see those kind of. Those mental lapse errors from Escobar that, you know, for every one amazing play, he might make another mental error on an easy play that he shouldn't. But I haven't been seeing that as much this year. Granted, it's a small sample size, but so, you know, I agree. If he keeps going the rate he's going, I mean, that, he's going to have that Golden Glove locked up. And you've got people, you hear Buster Olney will come on the radio and talk about him. And, you know, the only other person that they bring up is, really is Andrelton Simmons from Atlanta, but mm-hmm. you know, other than him, I mean, you start to hear that hugely best shortstop on the planet type of comment, and you know it's legit so far this year. So he's been excellent, and he's picked it up at the plate too.
Yeah, he's a lot more patient. He's having a lot better at bats.
Yes, he is, yep. And he's hitting close to 280, and he moved up. Put it this way. Yost put him at second today in the lineup.
Nobody said anything.
I wasn't even angry about it.
Yeah,
I wasn't even angry.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right.
So, yeah. All right. Well, that's going to kind of wrap it up for the weekly wrap-up. And stick with us after the break, and we're going to delve into some comments that Dayton Moore made this week that we'll just say that Michael and I don't necessarily agree with, and we'll tell you why on the other side of this break.
Kelly's Westport Inn has been a Kansas City tradition for generations, but now you can be part of a new tradition brought to you by Kelly's and their friendly neighbors at McCoy's. On Sunday, May 25th, come on out to the third annual Kelly's and McCoy's Block Party. Bring a friend, meet new friends. You can dance by yourself. We don't care. It's whatever makes you happy. There's just a $5 cover charge to get into the best outdoor party in Westport. The fun starts at 8 p.m. Come out and enjoy the warm spring air and the best entertainment district the city has to offer. And while you're sipping on a refreshing beverage, in moderation, of course, enjoy the sounds of Lost Wax, who take the stage at 9:30 and will be playing long into the night. I mean, you're off on Memorial Day already, right? It's everything you could want. Great weather, great atmosphere, and the great people of Kansas City. And even better, you've got Lost Wax playing all your favorite tunes. That's on May 25th, starting at 8 p.m., the third annual Kelly's and McCoy's Block Party.
And welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. I am your host, Jeff Herr, with Michael Engel. And as you just heard on our break, the Kelly's Westport Inn and McCoy's will be having their annual block party. So be sure to attend that. It's a lot of fun. It's always a lot of fun whenever Kelly's involved. So be sure to make your way down for that. But as we told you in the last segment, Mike and I are going to hit on some comments here that, first of all, Dayton Moore, he kind of does this periodically throughout the season where he more or less makes his rounds, if you will, and kind of does interviews with multiple sources. So you had interviews with Fox Sports Kansas City that he did, and interviews with the Kansas City Star, and he more or less gives the same information to each one, but a little bit different quotes, which it makes our job easier because it gives him more opportunities to say something that we can easily refute or disagree with. But Mike, why don't you go ahead and run down some of the quotes that he gave, and you know, then we can kind of start from there. We can tell you what Mike and I's thoughts are on these.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that kind of inspired this was after that Monday game. I mean, the Royals had like 15 hits in that game, and they only scored 5 runs. They never really ran away from it. And if you hit, you know, you get 15, you know, hits, you should really win that game. But you know, it kind of inspired Dayton to come out and say, you know, some things about addressing the offensive problems. You know, if you look at it, the Royals, they swing at bad pitches. They swing out, you know, outside the zone. They don't take a lot of walks. And Dayton has said that, you know, they're going to be accountable, but he's really concerned mostly with, this is a quote, it's quite simple for us. We need to be having our best at-bats when it matters most, when runners are in scoring position. And that's not happening now. And it's a nice sentiment, but at the same time, I don't know why you would distinguish between having your best at-bats, you know, when runners are on versus having them all the time. You know, why not treat every at-bat like the best at-bat you need to have? It's a nice soundbite for him, but I don't think that it's an accident that he had to phrase it that way, because I think somewhere in there he does think that there is this difference between an at-bat with a guy in scoring position, which there is, because your run potential is higher, but that doesn't mean that you necessarily need to change your approach at all times. Your idea is still to get a hit, to get on base, and to keep the inning going. And that doesn't seem to be present in this line.
To me, when I heard that, it was Dayton Moore using segmentation to try and, you know, more or less like snapping his fingers, hey, look over here, look over here.
Cloud,
you know,
the because, issue.
Yes, because yeah. Exactly. The issue isn't runners in scoring position. If you look at the numbers, the issue is hitting whenever. Runners in scoring position, no runners in scoring position, yeah. Runners on base, no runners on base. It's all bad. And just like you said, you know, that's where a situational approach, you know, the hitter shouldn't be doing any situational thinking. I know the reality of the situation is it is a little bit different, but ultimately it's about the process, which should not change. Mm-hmm. And that's what, you know, we had Alan Yeager on a while back, and he's obviously talking about pitching, but it still applies to all facets of the game. You know, how many outs there are, how many runners are on base, you know, what the score is, none of that should matter. You should have an approach and a process that you go through every time. And that's what should be the focus.
Yeah. And, you know, in that same article, which was this one's on Fox Sports Kansas City.
Jeffrey Flanagan.
And they also talked about the Royals swinging at 3-0 pitches. And, you know, the response, they have just one hit. And they've actually hit into a double play. So in 6 3-0 swings, they've got 6 outs. And what Moore said is the results of that are unacceptable. And I think the word results is interesting, because it's not, the problem isn't that they swung at the 3-0 pitch. The problem that he's hinting at is that because it didn't work out, that's the problem. And that goes back to what you just said. The process of these things is that, you know, the more times that you get on base, the more your, you know, potential to score a run is going to go up. I mean, it's going to go up the more runners you have on, the more times you have runners on. So, you know, here's a thing. If you look at a daily box score, and more often than not, the team that has the most runners left on base will still probably win that game, because throughout the game, they got more runners on. You know, if you get a guy on first and second every single inning, you got a really good chance of getting on base or getting a run home, because you've got runners on all the time. But, you know, the Royals, they struggle at getting on base. And if you look at them now, they're below average on base percentage, and they're below average on slugging percentage. And so they're not getting runners on consistently enough and not relative to the rest of the league. And so they're having trouble scoring. And it's not a tough call here. I mean, there's a pretty strong correlation between on base percentage and runs per game. If you look at it year by year, I mean, there might be some variance between, you know, team that might be fifth in one might be seventh or eighth in another, but generally you're not going to have a team that's last in OBP be at the top of runs per game. And so, you know, you really have to embrace the right approach to get on base. And, you know, for the Royals, if you look, there's a really interesting article on Fangraphs from a couple of weeks ago about the Royals swinging at pitches out of the zone. And generally, if you're swinging at pitches out of the zone, those are probably pitchers' pitches. And you're going to give yourself less likelihood to get a hit if you're swinging at a bad pitch versus letting it go. And so, you know, you run into a problem there where you're going to have a bad, you're going to hit more ground balls, and this team hits a lot of ground balls.
And you're increasing the pitcher's margin of error, because if you're only swinging at pitches inside the zone and making a lot of contact, then a pitcher's not going to throw something that's a foot outside the plate, because he knows he's not – if he's not pitching to Mike Moustakas, he knows you're probably not going to swing. But if you watch when Mike Moustakas and, to a lesser degree, Eric Hosmer, when they get up to the plate, watch the catcher next time you're on TV, and you see the catcher, he does his, the little squat move thing where he takes a step to the opposite side, which would be the catcher's left. Because the every single pitcher pitches those two exactly the same way, and Hosmer is starting. Hosmer goes in and out. I feel, just from the
he's
been better at laying off of it lately. But earlier in the season, he wasn't, and throughout the year, that's why
2012 he was terrible at it.
Oh, awful. And that's actually he had when he was in 2011 when he came up, he had some issues. Like he got off to a hot start. And then had some issues, and that was why. And then he learned to lay off it, and then he finished strong. So he kind of has – he goes in and out, but Moustakas has just never really quite grasped that concept that pitchers know what his tendencies are, and they're going to pitch him the same way each time. And but point being, you know, the more that hitters swing at those pitches, then the less a pitcher has to try to kind of toe that line, if you will, and get it as close to the zone, but not, you know, when you're basically, you're not forcing the pitcher to make any errors, because you're any errors they make, you're taking away from, you know, you're making
you're
up.
You're helping
for
them. And it basically, exactly. The old school approach that like Ted Williams school of hitting is that, you know, you, this is your strike zone. It's this number of inches wide. Well, if you give the, you know, if you go after the pitch that they throw 2 inches off the plate or 2 inches out of the zone, well, they're just going to expand the zone even more until you stop chasing it. And so if you keep chasing that, you're just increasing the potential for them to just throw it away from the heart of the plate where you want it to be. And so you're making it so much easier on the pitchers. If you're not laying off of those, I mean, that's one more pitch that the pitcher doesn't have to throw. And you know, in situations where you're facing a tough starter, well, you can't work that guy out. You can't get into the team's bullpen either. And so you're not getting guys on base. You're not hitting the ball well. And you're also letting the better pitchers on the team pitch against you for more innings, more pitches. And, you know, all in all, it's a bad recipe.
And my dad would always tell me, I never really got to see Hal McRae play because he was kind of before my time. But my dad always told me the one thing he said about Hal McRae was that he never swung at the first pitch. And I'm not out here trying to – I'm not going to try and say don't ever swing at the first pitch and be like Hal McRae, you know. But I think the what I always took from that was the idea that Hal McRae went up there more or less with the idea that I'm going to make you pitch to me. You know, I'm not going to let you dictate how this at bat goes. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to just swing because, you know, I'm up here and I want to make contact. You know, this is, we're going to make this, you know, I'm not necessarily saying that's what his mentality, but that's kind of what it felt like to me. And that's how I always interpreted it. And I think that's how you would want your pitchers to, or your hitters to approach things.
Yeah, I mean, you want them to have a plan at the plate, and anytime you can turn the pressure over from the batter to the pitcher, I mean, you want to do that. You know, that's why, you know, you look at how hitters hit with a 2-0 count or 3-1 count. Well, that's where, you know, the pitcher doesn't want to go to 3-0 and have the threat of a walk, so you're more likely to get a fastball there. It's more likely to be in the zone, and it's a more hittable pitch. Same with 3-1. They don't want to walk the guy. So if you've got a guy that you are pretty sure he's going to throw a fastball, and you could guess fastball most of the time and get it right on 3-1, if it's in the zone, that gives you an opportunity to hit the ball and likely hit it hard because you have an idea of location. You know, he's not going to try to pitch you off the plate in that spot unless, you know, it's a special situation like, you know, in the NL, you know, you've got the pitcher next. They're just going to throw around you or whatever. But for the most part, you have an idea what's coming there, and it's definitely swayed into the hitter's favor in that spot. And you know, it's to the hitter's benefit to get into those counts so that the pitcher has to come into them. And it's the same thing with the Hal McRae thing. And, you have to wait for your pitch, have an idea of what they're going to have to do. And if they get to that point where you're in a hitter's count, you know, you've got to be looking for that good pitch. And, you know, the Royals don't get into those hitter's counts enough. I mean, you have to get into those hitter's counts so that you give yourself the best advantage to get a good hittable pitch. And, you know, if the Royals do that consistently, any team, if they do that consistently, you know, you've got a better chance. Plus, you get the benefit of, you know, working some more pitches out of the opposing pitcher. So, you know, it's all about approach, and the Royals, you know, the data really will show that they don't do that enough. They go for those pitcher's pitches, and, you know, there's a reason the pitchers are throwing them, because there's no reason to challenge the Royals hitters. And so you see the results now where the Royals just have trouble scoring runs most of the time. And they don't walk either. I mean, they don't walk a lot in general. And, you know, that's a big component to getting on base, which, again, we've covered is a big component, the main component to scoring runs. And, you know, you look consistently, the Royals are a low power team, and their on base percentage is heavily influenced by how well their batting average is going to be, which is really dependent on getting the ball in play. And you see it's usually because they get a couple hits in a row, they might steal a base, but it's generally they get four, five, six hitters that all in a row will get a hit or at least move a runner, you know, because they're not hitting homers, they're not really walking. It's just a bunch of singles and sometimes doubles that do it. And it's what on Twitter ends up getting hashtagged as sequencing. And that's why when you get to a point where, you know, that doesn't work out, where that third hitter might get a hit, but that fourth one doesn't, that's where you get those stranded runners, which has happened a couple of times where the Royals get, you know, bases loaded on some soft hit singles where nobody's really able to advance. And then you end up stuck with runners on base. So it makes it really difficult if you're, you know, really just trying to rely on getting the ball through. If you've got a pitcher that can't, that is unable to throw strikes and you lay off of it and you take the base, well, now when those guys hit behind you, you know, you may have a better chance of getting a run scored, because, you know, it's a lot better to get a walk and then say you have three guys hit behind him. Well, now you do have a run. You want to walk, you want to get on base, and the Royals have never really been good at doing that, even though they will pay lip service to it, even way back, you know, all the time. I mean, they talk about it all the time, but they never really do it.
It's interesting to me because, and I've got an article that I'm putting together that I'm actually gonna post at some point. I've been talking about writing an article for a while, and just like ever since stopped writing for 610, I've kind of taken a break, but I think I'm going to jump back in here with this. But anyway, so that'll probably be on Pine Tar Press whenever I get that done, which I'm aiming for sometime this week. But anyway, the one of the things that I'm kind of talking about in the article is something that Mike and I talked last week about, the home runs being an issue. Kauffman Stadium, does it prevent them? Does it not? What can be done? So forth. And Joe Posnanski wrote an article. It didn't necessarily take the same angle, but just talking about the Royals' home run futility over the years. And he went into a little bit of their history. And I think it's so interesting that the Royals have, they're basically just for the last 10 years or so, it seems, and probably not even maybe 20 years or so, it seems like they've really been kind of just at war with their own conflicting ideologies, and more or less that was a long way of saying that they've been inconsistent. And what I mean by that is they, like Mike kind of just alluded to, throughout their history, back in the 70s and 80s, they had AstroTurf and they had a big park. So what could they do? Well, they could get players like Willie Wilson and Amos Otis and George Brett, and they'd get out there and they'd slap the ball around in the gaps, and it would hit that AstroTurf, and it would hit the fence, and it would roll along, and they'd get a lot of doubles and triples. And they had speed guys that could maybe even leg something that would be a long single into a double, or maybe something that was normally a double into a triple. And the idea being, well, if they can't score home runs, or if they can't hit home runs, they'll score their runs by doing these, you know, clearing the bases with a double or a triple instead, which is all well and good, I suppose, but the problem is They switched from AstroTurf to regular grass, so that's going to cut down on some advantages that they have. And then at one point in the 90s, they moved, which Mike and I talked about last week, they moved the fences in because that was when all the home run craze really started back in the 90s and the steroid era and all that. And you say, okay, the Royals, well, we want a piece of that. We want that so bad to be a home run hitting team, you know, and then they realize, oh crap, well,
we have to pitch too.
Yes, everyone else can hit home runs now in this stadium. So they move the fences back out and they're like, okay, well, and then it was just a mess. But Dayton Moore comes and he's like, okay, well, you know, he came from the National League team and coming from the Braves, basically the best pitching and defense dynasty maybe ever, when you look at having Greg Maddux, John Smoltz, and Tom Glavine all on the same staff for so long. And then you had defensive players like Chipper Jones, Andrew Jones, Ryan Klesko, guys like that, that on that team. I mean, that was one hell of a dynasty there, and that's where he came from. And obviously they had offensive prowess too, but their pitching and their defense was really good. And that's where I think that's what he wants this team to be. And so then you had 2012 came along. I'm sorry, last year, after 2012 and last year in the offseason before 2013, you know, what was the theme? It was we want on base, we want home runs. And we want guys to pull the ball. We want guys to hit home runs. That's what we want. That's what we're going for. Lorenzo Cain can hit 25 home runs. Hosmer can hit 25. Moose can hit 25. Butler, Gordon, everybody on the team, according to Ned Yost, can
hit. We're all hitting 25.
Mike and I can hit 25 home runs. So, and then they don't hit home runs. And Jack Maloof comes on and says, well, we're never going to hit home runs. So you're the hitting coach. And we talked about this last week, so we don't need to get back into it. But point being, it's so interesting to kind of see that the Royals, on one hand, they say, well, we got to play to our park and we got to get these other guys. And on the other hand, they say, well, we want to hit all these home runs. And it's a lot of that, I think what the ultimate conclusion that we came to is that it's, yes, harder to hit home runs in Kauffman Stadium, but it can be done.
Yep.
And I think they need to just stick with an approach and find the right players.
And the thing
and they
is,
haven't done that.
Yeah, if you don't hit homers, you can counteract that by getting on base a lot.
Absolutely.
I mean, you look at last year the St. Louis Cardinals went to the World Series and nearly ended up winning it. They were 27th in home runs in Major League Baseball, but they were third in on base percentage. You know, so they're able to get those guys on all the time, and that's in the NL. You know, so you've got the pitcher coming up every third time through the order. So, you know, their scoring is generally going to be down, but it did, you know, didn't really impact them because they were able to get on base and they were one of the top scoring teams. They were top scoring team in the NL, I believe. And so they did it without home runs. And you can do that if you get on base a lot. You know, ideally, I think you want to have guys who can get on base and also hit for power. You know, the Sandy Alderson model is basically every batter will treat their at bat like their leadoff guy with the goal of getting on base. Because when you look at on base percentage, all it really is you take the number of times a player does not make an out and you divide that by the number of times they go up to the plate. So if someone has a 350 on base percentage, they are making an out 65% of the time. And you want guys who make outs less frequently because you only get 27 of them. That's your time clock. So that's why with Moneyball, they don't want to bunt. You know, they don't want to steal bases. They want guys who can take a walk. The other fringe benefit is that, you know, every batter should have, you know, some power to hit homers because a pitcher has to pitch cautiously, which can lead to walks, which makes for higher on base percentage. And so then if you've got, you know, those guys who can take that kind of approach, it's you know, you get guys on base and then you get guys behind them who can hit home runs. And you know, the idea with that, which Billy Bean adopted and really implemented successfully, is that you can teach these things mentally. You can do that. Now Dayton Moore, at least in the past, he has said completely the opposite. He says back in 2011, We did the Royals did the digital digest, and we asked him because we were like, hey, you talk about guys with on base percentage all the time, but then you go sign Unieski Betancourt and you sign Jeff Francoeur and you sign Miguel Olivo. None of those are on base guys. And Moore kind of explained to us that he felt that on base skills usually have to be drafted. So they either have it or they don't. It's difficult to teach it. And that the market is skewed to value guys who get on base. And so everybody's going for the on base guys, and teams have to sign whoever they can get. Who at least kind of fit in. And so you're almost settling for guys even though they don't get on base. And so that's completely at odds with the Alderson being Moneyball kind of way of looking at it, because I think you can teach it. You look at the Twins this year, they're seventh in run scored, they're seventh in on base percentage, they're very close to the same team. They're a team that was projected to be last in the AL, and they're scoring runs like crazy because they hardly swing at anything. They are willing to take pitches and take walks, and it's paying off for them right now.
We've talked on this show about BABIP, which is, you know, batting average on balls in play, and it's something that if you have these on base skills from that, you know, Alderson Bean mindset that you can cultivate and use to your advantage, then things like BABIP are slightly devalued in a good way. And that you don't have to rely on it as much. Because, like, the Royals right now, if they're going to go, you know, most of their hitters, if they go on a huge streak, it's of, or the Royals have a good offensive outburst, it's going to be fueled by that BABIP number, because it's going to be a lot of it based on them getting hits to drop. And yeah, obviously, you need hits to drop to score a lot of runs. So I'm not trying to, you know, say that that's not a reality. But, you know, fact of the matter is, that's why the Royals can be so streaky at times, because they can, if they get a lot of those hits to drops, they're going to score some runs like they have these last couple games. But if Alcides Escobar and Eric Hosmer and, you know, Alex Gordon are hitting into a lot of defensive shifts, which are, by the way, kind of sweeping baseball this year and making a big difference in offensive output, well, when that happens, then all of a sudden it's a struggle to score runs. And that's why the on-base is so important, where you can actually – it doesn't have to – it's the one thing, you know, more or less, that a hitter can – obviously, a hitter's got, you know, the ability to change his swing path and things like that, but having that on-base skill, if you will, is something that the hitter can truly control, more so than when they make contact, you know – a great hitter might be able to, on some level, try and direct where he hits the ball, but he's not going to direct where the player is. You know, the player's lined up where they are, and you're also not going to direct, or you're also not going to be able to control that player's ability to get a ball that you maybe put in a perfect spot. So being able to control that on-base aspect and get on base is something that has a tremendous amount of value, because it's not reliant on any other factor other than someone being able to, you know, more or less be able to recognize pitches. And obviously, part, you know, on base is also, you know, has a hitting is obviously a large part of it. But the more that you're able to show that you can be patient and that you can walk and that you can, you know, make the pitcher pitch to you, like we talked about, the more pitches you're going to get to hit that you can turn into base hits as well.
Yeah, and that's something that guys like, you know, when Billy Butler walks, you know, a lot of times people will complain because, well, what good does it do for him to walk? And
well,
you know,
a lot of good.
I mean, yeah, I mean, it's not an out. He's not swinging at a bad pitch. You know, maybe he's a bad example because, you know, it is kind of tough to move him around the bases. But a guy like, you know, Joey Votto, who's got some more athleticism to him, you know, people will complain about him walking because they want to see him driving in the runs. But what his approach is that he goes up there and he's not going to make an out. If he's making an out, it's generally going to be because he hit it at somebody. And, you know, you've seen it enough times where someone will just blister the ball. They'll just nail it. It's a laser and it's hit right at somebody. And there's nothing you can do about that. But you can do something about the pitches that you swing at or don't swing at. And, you know, over time, you know, you've got to be able to, you know, get on base. And that's, like I said before, you're just trying to not make outs. And the good hitters can recognize those pitches. They're often the guys who can hit it really hard and hit it really well.
Yes.
Because, again, they're recognizing the pitches. And so, but even if you're not, you know, you can still, you know, be a guy who can walk.
And over time, you know, like say a 162 game season, on base percentage is a much greater predictor of team success historically. And for example, something to watch, and we'll pay attention to this just kind of throughout the season and see how it goes. But right now, one of the hottest teams in the league is the Milwaukee Brewers, right? They have a 5-game lead in their division already. And
that's a division that had 3 teams in the playoffs last year,
including the World Series runner. Yeah, with St. Louis, the World Series runner up. So, you know, the Brewers are 22-12, but their on base percentage is .302 right now, which is actually lower than the Royals. So, by a few points. But the difference is Royals have 14 home runs and the Brewers have 36. Now, the Brewers were not picked to win that division. But the question then becomes, the question is, are the Brewers going to be able to sustain this home run pace all season and therefore keep up their win percentage pace? Or if not, what's going to happen to their on base? And are they going to be able to keep up in the win column? Because something I did was going back and I looked, did some research statistically, and I looked back at just ever since 2001, and I looked back at all the different different major offensive and pitching categories, right? Because we mentioned earlier Dayton Moore pitching and defense. That's one of the things that he's harped on a lot since he's been here. You know, pitching and defense. We want to build. That's what we want to build our team around. Well, when you really break it down and you look at it, so let's say you want to say. You want to believe that ERA as a team is a great predictor of success. Well, I mean, it's probably going to be, but I went back and looked, and the team that led the league in ERA ever since 2001 all the way through last year has, so you're looking at 12 seasons, and they've made the playoffs 13 seasons, made the playoffs 9 times. So there's 4 times in the last 13 years, so that they have not made the playoffs. And only one time has the team over the last 13 years, only one time has the team that's led the league in ERA won the World Series, and that was the Giants in 2010. And then we've talked about FIP and XFIP on this show, and that those are actually a greater predictor of what, you know, what a team's pitching is like. And those numbers get even worse. So when you look at the team that led the league in FIP, fielding independent pitching, they've only made the playoffs 6 times in the last 13 years and never won the World Series. So, you know, pitching and defense is important, and it's usually going to lead to you having a good season, but it's not necessarily the ultimate predictor of success, because there are still teams that lead the league in those categories and don't even make the playoffs, let alone make a lot of noise. But then if you go over to the offensive side and you look at on base percentage, well, the team that's led the league, this was what I thought was most interesting, the team that's led the league in on base percentage over the last 13 years has made the playoffs every single year. Now, that has a little bit of an asterisk next to it, because in 2011, the Cardinals and the Red Sox were tied for the league lead in on-base percentage. And the Red Sox, if you'll remember, actually did not make the playoffs. However, that was the year that it took literally the most epic collapse in Major League Baseball history, where they were up by 7 games with 10 to play or something ridiculous. And they just went on a huge tear of losing
and
did not make
day.
The playoffs on the last day of the season. So, but so technically, you know, the league leaders still did make and end up winning the World Series.
13 out of 14, you could say.
Yeah, and
still pretty.
That wasn't the only one. There were a total of 4 teams in that time span that won the World Series, and 9 teams out of the 13, or I guess you could say 14, that went to the championship series in their respective leagues. So now, I mean, there's also a little bit of a caveat, because if you look through here, between the Red Sox and the Yankees, out of the possible 14 teams, the Red Sox and the Yankees account for 11 of them. So, but there's a reason everyone hates the Red Sox and the Yankees, and they're good every year. And that's one of the reasons. You know, obviously they have a lot of talented players, but they can know and they value things like getting on base. And also, so do teams like the Cardinals, who have won a couple World Series in that time span as well. So, I mean, I thought those were some kind of interesting numbers. And especially when you look at, just to throw a couple more out there, the league leader in on-base percentage over those 13 years, the average is .360 on-base percentage. And then I went back and I looked at the World Series champions from all those years, see what their average was, and the average on-base percentage of the World Series champion was .341. So now I would say that's a significant amount lower, almost 20 points lower. But still, you know, .341, that's a solid on-base percentage, especially from a team standpoint. But the Royals in that same time frame have their on-base percentage is .323, which is actually a lot higher than I would have thought it would be. I would have thought it'd be closer to that 300 range like it is this year. I mean, that's still, you're looking at close to 40 points below the average for the league leader and close to 20 points below the average for the World Series champion. So, and during that time span, the only two times did the Royals actually have a higher on-base percentage than the World Series champion, one being the 2010 Giants, who had a .321 and the Royals had a .331 on base. And then the other being the 2003 Marlins, with Royals had a .336 on base that year, which, as if we'll all remember, was the year the Royals, the only other winning season in the last two decades for the Royals besides last year. And then the Marlins had a .333 on base. So, I mean, that's kind of a lot of numbers to digest, but from throwing that out there, what do you think when you hear those things, Mike?
You definitely see where teams can prioritize those on base skills, and you know, teams like the Red Sox and Yankees, you know, being at the top. I mean, they're going after guys who are successful, and guys who are successful are guys who are getting on base at a high rate. And you know, it's kind of interesting to kind of look at, I mean, I'm looking at the numbers that you have, and you've got 2011 for the Royals kind of distinguished. And, you know, that was a really good offensive year. But if you look at where the Royals ranked in their walk percentage, it was towards the bottom of the league, but their on base was towards the higher part. But, you know, when you look at it later in future years, you know, it wasn't sustainable the next 2 years following the same principles of, you know, not getting walks. Their on-base drops because, again, they, you know, by putting the ball in play more often, you know, it gives more opportunities for
it's
the defense.
Fuel.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely all by their batting average, which long-term is difficult to sustain. I mean, I guess one way to kind of look at it is if you get 40 plate appearances in a game and you've got a team on-base percentage of, you know, 350, so that's 35% of those, you know, 40, you know, those 40 plate appearances, you're going to get more runners on than the team with the 300 on base.
That's 15 runners on versus 12.
Yeah, and that's just, you do that every single day for 162 games, and it's going to add up really quickly. It's kind of like if you take, you know, if you win five games out of every nine, you're going to, at the end of the year, you're going to have 90 wins, even though it's only one more game. The season is so long, and there's so many instances of games, plate appearances, at-bats, you know, it adds up very quickly, and those small little advantages can really build up. And even if it's just, you know, the simple matter of one extra walk a game, that can be, you know, one more runner.
And something else we kind of delved into with these stats that Mike touched on, he talked about the kind of bean money ball method, that not only do they devalue bunts, but just eschew them completely, you know, hardly ever.
Yeah, you're not giving away now.
Do they bunt? And so I went and looked, and because we all know Ned Yost loves Bunning. Hell, a few games ago, Eric Hosmer, your number three, supposedly superstar, power, all-around, all-world, supposed to be hitter, squared up to Bunt. I don't know. I don't know if it was Hosmer doing it on his own, if it was Ned Yost signaling in or whatever. But if he's going to go up there and bunt, at some point they've had a discussion and Hosmer
said, I might bunt,
you know, and Ned Yost said,
okay,
you got the green light to bunt all day long. So the point being, I looked at, you know, sacrifice hits more or less, which the majority of those are going to be bunts. I don't even know if they.
Yeah, they should be exactly pretty much bunts generally all the time. Sack flies. Yeah. I think they generally would categorize them differently.
Yeah, they have a separate sack fly stat, but I just didn't want to say that it was only bunts because I'm not yeah. certain on that. I got these from FanGraphs, but anyway, sacrifice hits, more or less bunts. And if you look at the team that led the league and sacrifice hits over that same time span we've been talking about, the last 13 years, only twice have teams actually gone to the playoffs. And once was the Reds last year, and that was because of the new wild card. So they wouldn't have got in a normal year. So,
and what was the other team?
The other team was the Rockies in 2007 when they had that crazy streak to end the season, 20-some games in a row. I mean, so that's almost the reverse scenario of that Boston collapse, where, you know, you could almost count the Red Sox as a team, and you could almost not count the Rockies as a team just because of how insane and not very often that those streaks happen. But
according to your information, the Rockies were the leader the year before and the year after 2007, and they averaged 75 wins versus the 90. So, you know, what's more likely, that they're bunting and they win 90 games, or they're bunting and they're only going to win 75? So they're, you know, that's a connection there.
The average win output for the team that leads the league in sacrifice hits is 80 games. So below 500, whereas, you know, teams leading in on a base percentage, the average win output is 97 games. In 97. Now, I will throw out that the number for on-base percentage is slightly skewed simply because the 2001 Seattle Mariners are included, and they won 116 games, which is, that's the most ever, isn't it?
I think so.
Yeah, so
that's a lot of wins.
That's a lot of wins. So that's going to skew that number up a little bit. But even if you were to just to take away or to do just the rest of them, then you're averaging still 95 games. So, I mean, that's pretty impressive. So if the Royals, theoretically, if the Royals are going to win or are going to lead the league in on-base percentage, they'd probably win above 90 games, which would be the first time that would happen in almost three decades. So, you know, just a lot of interesting stuff. And just to kind of round it out, sacrifice flies, I also looked at that. And that's a little bit more muddled. The sacrifice fly is a little bit more
less
valuable
of a willing thing.
Yeah, and more often than not, it's going to lead to a run, whereas, you know,
sack bunt's usually only going to be you're getting bases.
Yeah,
you're trading it out for a base or two bases.
You're going to advance the runner. They're not necessarily always coming home, so forth. So, but yeah, the league leader in sacrifice flies has made the playoffs 8 times in 13 years and actually won the World Series once and went to 5 championship games. So,
yeah. But at the same time, you're getting runners on. You're getting runners on third base.
So. Exactly. And the average win output for the team that leads the league in sacrifice flies is 93 games. So,
yeah,
interesting that
like the Red Sox, Cardinals, Mariners, you know, some of the same teams that you see in the on base.
Usual suspects.
Yeah.
And well, one final one that I'll kind of throw out, at least in terms of rounding out the statistical discussion, slugging percentage and OPS, right? You think, oh, well, those, in, you know, OPS includes on base percentage, so it should be more important. And slugging's more important because that's where the runs really come from. Well, not necessarily, because the team that's led the league in slugging percentage over those 13 years has only made the playoffs six times and only won the World Series twice, because it happened to be the Red Sox both times, who also, or I'm sorry, led, won the World Series three times. Happened to be the Red Sox, the Yankees, who also led the league in on base percentage those respective years. But then OPS, you had four different times that the league leader in OPS missed the playoffs. So the only, looking at all these different statistics, you want to talk ERA, you want to talk XFIP or FIP, you talk slugging percentage, batting average, all those different statistics, the one most consistent indicator of success that's led to the most playoff appearances and the most World Series champions over the last 13 years has been on base percentage. And even for looking back at all the World Series winners from those times, they have averaged ranking in the top 10 in on-base percentage, whereas the Royals have averaged finishing 20th in the league. So that's kind of, I mean, we'll
delightful.
Yes. I won't throw any more numbers out at you, but I just thought that was interesting. We pulled a lot of those together, and it just kind of, if nothing else, it just goes to show how kind of misguided the Royals have been when, and just not seeming to value the consistently most predictive and, excuse me, most valuable statistic. I mean, I personally don't understand it, and I'm not sure why the Royals don't pick up on this.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like if Dayton Moore's belief is that it's something that you can't teach, then it's not going to be taught.
I wasn't interrupting. That's a really good point. I hadn't thought about it that way. If you say it can't be taught, then you're not going to teach it. That's interesting. That's a good point.
You're going to prioritize every other lesson you can, which is, you know, whatever. And so, yeah, Dozier's an example of a guy that they could have drafted who has on-base skills. And I think that there is something kind of just natural to it. But I think you can also teach that discipline and teach pitch recognition. You know, you can recognize keys from the pitcher as he's throwing to get an idea. Okay, well, maybe he's more likely to throw curve, and maybe that's going to be something that'll end up in the dirt and I don't have to chase it. Or, you know, just being in the cage or scouting reports and knowing that this guy is generally not, you know, very sharp, so I'm not going to help him out. You know, I think you can take that and really make it work. You know, we talked a lot about power. I mean, you look at the Giants, they've made the World Series a few times, and they've kind of had the same defense and pitching model, but they have even worse of a stadium for hitting home runs than the Royals do, but they still manage to make it because the other factor that they have that the Royals haven't is they get on base.
I think that's a good point, Mike. I hope that, you know, with Hunter Dozier, you'd like to see that maybe being a new direction, if you will, for the organization. But unfortunately, at this point, as we talked about before, the Royals have earned, nor should they receive, any benefit of the doubt. Despite how much Dayton Moore expects you to give it, they have not earned it in any way. And so I won't rely on them kind of turning a new leaf, if you will, where they start to value some of these skills that they just haven't shown the ability to value in the past. But with that, I think we're going to wrap up this topic here, and then we'll come back and we will wrap up the show. So we'll see you back on the other side.
The Triple Play Podcast.
So, I mean, the Rockies are just a weird team, man.
Well, if you look at their actual overall numbers for the team, their home away splits are, get this is going to be hilarious, away, it's a little above average. They're kind of average in the National League on the road. They're hitting .254 as a team, .302 on base, .403 slug. At home, .349 batting average, .396 OBP, .580 slug as a team.
.396 on base as a team.
Wow.
That's impossible.
The Royals Podcast Network.
Girls look, yo, Danny fly. I'm pimp to the beat. Walking down the street in Manula free. Yeah, this is how I roll. Animal print pants out of control. Red food with the big afro, where they like Bruce Lee. Rock at the club, yeah.
Girl, look at that body. Girl, look at that body. I'm sexy and I know it.
And welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. What you just heard there on our last break was a little sample from a band called Lost Wax, and they will actually be playing at the Kelly's Block Party, which takes place at 8 o'clock on May 25th. May 25th at 8 o'clock is when the Kelly's Block Party will be, and that should be an awesome time. Westport will be hopping. The weather's going to be great. It'll be May. Everybody will be out having a good time. And the band you just heard, Lost Wax, they'll actually take the stage, and they'll be playing live at the Kelly's Block Party on May 25th at 9:30. So go ahead, gear up for that.
They're playing all night, too.
They're playing all night. And do they need tickets for this?
It's $5, $10.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm sure they can do that at the door, and I don't know if you can get them in advance or not. But
yeah, it should just be like cover charge.
Yeah, I assume that's what it's going to be. But Kelly's Block Party, May 25th, 8 o'clock. Lost Wax takes the stage at 9:30. Pretty cool band. Definitely check them out, and definitely go to the Block Party because it's going to be one heck of a time. We're going to wrap things up with you here. We've talked about a lot, kind of thrown a lot at you. We've kind of trying this new format out, still going in depth into a topic. It was, you know, last week we talked about the home run thing. This week it was the on base percentage and the value that has relative to Dayton Moore's comments that he made earlier this week. And we talked about the roller coaster ride it's been, and even just the short week already at Wednesday that it's been this week, and hopefully the Royals can get back on track. We got Royals coming up, 4-game series against the Seattle Mariners. The Mariners got off to a decent start this year, and they may have cooled off a little bit. Mike, what are your thoughts on this coming series?
You know, I think it's interesting because we were talking about home runs and hitting homers at Kauffman Stadium, but Aaron Stille just today posted up a thing about Royals by stadium. And they are, Safeco is one of their better stadiums for hitting home runs, strangely enough. And they just moved the fences in, too. So you might see a little bit.
Some fireworks, huh?
Yeah, there might be a jump in some of the power numbers, especially with Butler and Hosmer hitting well. And Sal Perez has hit a lot better, too. So, yeah, maybe there's a shot for the Royals to kind of climb out of that home run basement and kind of pull ahead of Jose Abreu, who's kind of been keeping pace with
Good
them.
Lord.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, 4 games, I think they might miss Felix Hernandez, which would be nice.
That would be nice.
But, yeah, and then right after that, they get a 9-game homestand, and they'll play Baltimore, who, you know, they played pretty well against, and they get the White Sox, and, you know, the Rockies will be in town, too. So the Rockies are hitting like crazy, though, so I don't really want to see the Rockies.
Troy Tulowitzki. Oh, my Lord.
He's at about 900 right now.
I have
it would be a cheat code on a video game.
Oh,
he's hitting so well.
I have a Baseball Reference pulled up right now, and I'm just on the homepage. And there's a little section of it that rolls through all the league leaders and all these different statistics. Every offensive one just about has Troy Tulowitzki. Batting average, on base, slugging, I mean, the whole deal. He's just going crazy.
They're but hitting like the 94 Rockies, 95 Rockies.
So hopefully they'll cool off a little bit by the time they get to play in the Royals.
Jeez.
But yeah, that hopefully they can if they win like 3 out of 4 from the Mariners and they'd be 19-18.
It's only a 2-game series against Colorado too, so
maybe they can kind of catch them on just a little bit of a downslope and maybe things start to snowball and they have kind of a first of all. Maybe they can avoid a May like they had last year, and possibly with any luck, maybe they turn these next 15-20 games into the July stretch they had last year after the All-Star break, where they just busted out of the gate and had a great, great stretch there.
I would love it.
I think we all would. So with that, I think we'll leave you tonight. Just a reminder, as we talked about at the beginning of the show, if you're having if you know anyone that mentioned something about iTunes or whatever, not being able to find the show, that's been the problem. It was an MLB decision. And let everyone know who listens to the show, they can still hear us on SoundCloud. They can still hear us on Stitcher. Nothing's going to change. We're still putting out the same content, same days each week. Shouldn't be an issue. But just in case there are any questions that arrive, or in case, you normally listen to SoundCloud and you're curious about what all the Twitter craziness is about, well, that's what's going on. And one last reminder, too, don't forget Kelly's Westport Inn Block Party, May 25th, starting at 8 o'clock. Lost Wax hits the stage at 9:30. They'll be playing all night. Should be a great time. Westport always is. Weather will be nice. Definitely hit that up. With that, I am Jeff Herr. With me is Michael Engel. And as always, go Royals.
You have been listening to a Royals Podcast Network presentation.
So, you know. What was that?
Oh, did you hear that?
Yeah.
Oh, so just a truck right outside my window.
Wow. All right.
It was like a big semi type thing. So sorry.
Crazy.
I don't know if you could hear it. I've even got my like headphone microphone thing in, so sorry about that.
That was a loud truck. Anyway, where was I? Hitters counts.
Yes. You know, one of the big deals being, did you hear that again?
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't know what that truck's doing here. But
anyway,
probably construction. Anyway, so